Across the Streams podcast is brought to you by the Cassion Foundation. The KIF exists to raise funds to battle Alzheimer's and dementia in all its forms, as well as giving back to the Billings community via scholarships for youth post-secondary journeys. Join us this coming July 13th, a Saturday at Prior Creek Golf Course for our second annual Cassion Foundation Golf Invitation, where we expect to have another full field of 36 foursomes enjoying 18 holes, camaraderie, food, beverage, and a good time, all while helping us raise money towards our cause. To learn more, visit CassionFoundation.org. Across the Streams podcast is also brought to you by Teams of Men. We exist to empower coaches of male athletes to enlighten their players to the potential of a reimagined manhood. Whether that is via our in-person workshops on campuses, at schools, with coaches, athletic department stakeholders, and players, or via our course curriculums that we can share digitally, or via our membership model that allows coaches from across the country, middle school through Power Five, football, basketball, baseball, any sport that gathers young men together with a coach, we have membership options to help you access our curriculum, access conversation prompts, access learning ideas for those post-practice huddles, those pre-film sessions, those long bus rides, where you have the platform to help young men embrace a high level of character, integrity, and emotional fluency. Teamsofmenllc.com. Across the Streams podcast, episode 3 of season 8, but overall, and we've been doing this more on our platforms when we share our episodes this season, we're just episode 215 overall. So we've been here, we're established, we're entrenched, and we're going forward. Today, a ton of discussion about parenting, and a ton of discussion about parenting young men, about parenting boys. I think there'll be some direct tie-ins and some crossovers from some articles we've digested in the past week that talk about some of the plight, some of the struggle, some of the issues facing not only boys, but also their moms and dads, in trying to guide them towards a positive masculinity, a healthy manhood, a reimagined manhood, full of emotional fluency, full of authentic relationships, full of healthy relationship skills. And so that's our focus in today's episode. I'll cite the articles that we're drawing a lot of our inspiration from, a lot of our talking points from. And there is a little bit more sports parallels in there that I'll try to weave in, especially from the framework of Teams of Men and the work I do across the country. But remember, this season 8, we have less of the coaching and like schematics and reactions to different sports events and outcomes of games. There's still going to be our parallels and our crossovers to what we think and in the ways I think coaches need to use their platform to amplify positive masculinity and trying to find better versions of their men through the sports they play. But a lot of what you're going to hear is more of the background research, more of the papers, more of the studies, more of the education than I'm exposed to, as a business owner now and not an active coach. And you'll get more of that today in episode 215 of Across the Streams. All right, so today, the first article I want to call everybody's attention to, and I'll put it in the links of our posts, but it's by Catherine Jezer Morton, Jezer-Morton, and it was published originally on February 17th of this year, 2024, on thecut.com, and it's titled, "Can Parents Prevent Their Sons from Sliding to the Right?" In the article, Morton delves into the complexities of modern family life, particularly the challenge parents face in guiding their sons through an increasingly polarized ideological landscape. As we unravel, and we're going to go into Morton's insights that she talks about and some of her pain points that she discusses in the article, because it's really a discussion of the broader societal challenges intersecting with parents' missions, right? We want to create and nurture emotionally fluent, respectful, and empathetic young men. And I think if you've listened to me and in my podcast, that's what I want coaches to do with their players. But obviously, it starts at home first, and it's more important for the person to grow. And I think it spoke to me because if you've listened to the pod over the years, or if you know us, Iones, if you know me now doing the pod solo in season 8, obviously, I lean left, y'all. I'm a lefty. I'm a Democrat. I'm a blue stater. That's my political ideology, and a lot of what I do in Teams of Men is rooted in blowing up the man box, in challenging misogyny, taking on the manosphere and the MRA and the incels and the Andrew Tates of the world, and using my podcast to give coaches and parents of male athletes ideologies and lesson plans and thoughts and conversation prompts to create men that I think are emotionally fluent, to create men that I think have healthy relationship skills, to create men more capable of not causing harm in the world with their hands or their mouth. So this article spoke to me because obviously Kelly and I in our house, we have two boys. Our oldest is 16, our youngest is 11, our daughter's in the middle of these two. But it's one of the things we've thought about because I do think in parenting, and you know, I learned this from my folks too, as much as you want to be models, role models for your kids, you don't want them to grow up to be you. I think I've grown into that realization that there are aspects of me that I don't want my sons to carry. There are issues or things that I have, or I don't know, behaviors or ingrained tics. I don't know how you would describe them necessarily, but you know, there's parts of me that I don't want them to have to deal with. I hope they grow past me. My dad used to tell Kane and I that a lot. I don't want you to be me. I want you to be better than me. And I want them to be even more fluent in this work. I don't want them to wait till they're 28, 29 years old to embrace exploding out of, recognizing and exploding out of seeing the man box. I would like them to see it sooner rather than later. And I try to do my damnedest to expose them to it now. But this article spoke to me because I do think there's a ton of what the author describes, Catherine Cheeser Morton, as issues that we could see at any of our dinner tables. We could see any of our minivan rides with the family, any of our interactions as a group at home. And one of those things that I think you've got to remember that I'm always going to be coming from a place of in these discussions is I don't think that enough of us hold our young men to true accountability. And what I mean by that is not this old school, I'll use my coaching analogy. It's not, accountability isn't me cussing at my sons. Accountability isn't me raging at my sons. Accountability is me showing my sons that actions that are harmful to others are not excused by simply an apology. Actions that are harmed by others are not inherent in there, that they're not deserved for my sons to go commit harm. Like kids, other kids, girls, other boys were not put on this earth for my sons to go figure out life on. So your child enters the sphere of my son's orbit. And because my son says something harmful, does something harmful, hey, that's just my kid being boys and they got to learn. You know, I think it's my job to try to help him learn before he harms others. This article talks a lot about the political divide in youth by gender. So in terms of male identifying folks, they are leaning more and more right and conservative, and female identifying folks are leaning more and more left as we get into the 21st century, 2024, 2025 and beyond. You know, I think you got to acknowledge that and recognize that that's fact of what's happening and then get into the why. And if you're out there and you're listening, yeah, I appreciate it. If you are crossing the stream and you're right-leaning and you still listen to me, knowing how I stand in a lot of these issues, I do think we can probably find common ground that you would want your child not to be causing harm, right? I think you would want your child not to be physically assaulting, hurting somebody else with their words or their actions or their body. So I think you can still listen to this episode that we do, even if you're like, well, I kind of want my son leading right. I could argue a lot of things with you, but I think if as long as we're coming from a place of we don't want our kids adopting ideologies or belief systems that make them think causing harm to others is okay. So the author starts the article and she describes finding on her oven, I believe, a drawing of a dick pic that one of her kids drew. And she decided that was kind of her entry point into, okay, we're at this stage in their life, whether it's puberty or whatever point you've identified with your young man in your house, that we're going to have to start discussing things that matter a lot going forward, that they're moving into this different realm of awareness. They're moving into this different realm, especially in the 21st century. Our young men are going to have a lot of skill sets and capacity to go grab information, good or bad or neutral information, far past what we were able to do. They don't have to spend time in a library. They don't have to learn the Dewey Decimal System to go find a book. They literally have the world's information, skewed or unskewed, biased or unbiased, objective or subjective, in their hands and their phones. And that is a part of the discussion in this article, is that a ton of the young men are gravitating towards information points, the Andrew Tates, the incel community, the manosphere community, the men's groups that promote a grievance-based identity. Like, as a white male, as a man, this world has shifted and now holds me accountable, holds me responsible for all the ills of the world. And as a man, I am aggrieved. I'm a victim now. And it talks a ton about exploring the concept of an identity based on grievance and how that can shape young men's lives and how they view people around them. And if they listen too much to the Andrew Tates of the world, they will associate their feelings of inadequacy. They will associate their feelings of worry and angst about who they are, who they're capable of becoming. They'll associate and assign blame to their natural feelings, which I think everybody growing up has. Whether you're stressed, you're worried, you hesitate, you're apprehensive about who you're growing into when you're 13 and 14 years old. I think that's all natural. But when you start to assign blame to women are taking my past to greatness from me, or you start to assign blame to black and brown bodies of culture, LGBTQ communities are taking away my chances at the greatness that I inherently deserve as a man, that's where we have problems. And the author talks about what is her and her husband, who are both professors, I believe at either community college or a local college there in the humanities, about knowing where they stand as progressive parents, but hearing things from their 13-year-old and 14-year-old at the dinner table that they don't want them to adopt as their permanent belief. But they talk about, like, okay, what she talks about in the article, should I be challenging and shutting down those articles, those comments or those belief systems when I hear them at the dinner table? And therefore, maybe she believes feeding into the cancel culture. And God, I hate saying that word because so many people on the opposite side of the political spectrum from me make cancel culture out to be, I can't say anything ever. When really, I think if you spout hateful, racist, sexist shit, your word should be canceled. You shouldn't be saying hateful, racist, sexist shit. There are consequences and accountability to saying hateful, racist, sexist shit. But she's worried if she shuts down her young man, her son, at her dinner table, he will never come to her or her husband again with, like, she wants them to be able to express things and then get to a conversation point where they can hopefully help them unlearn these ideas in these systems. And I struggle with it because I think there's a benefit there. I think vulnerability is real. Remember, transparency is sharing something that factually that you recall or did or said. Vulnerability is sharing something factually that truthfully happened to somebody that can hurt you with it. So I do think there's a world, and I preach this with teams of men, with the coaches that I have, that we need to model as adults vulnerability, and we need to model with adults, and we need to create spaces where young men can share and talk about things. I think I agree with the author 100%. However, there is the use in her article over and over about my family dinner table should be a safe space. My husband and I want them to have a safe space to sort out their feelings and navigate adolescence and starting to develop their ideological beliefs. And I just got to push back really hard on safe space. You guys have heard me talk about this before. I attribute it to a 2019 DEI session by the great Jen Fry at the NCA Diversity, Inclusion, Equity Conference. And she was the first one I heard. And I know it's been parroted ever since, and I've used it a bunch in my speaking. I don't believe in safe spaces. I believe in courageous spaces. I don't want safety in my space when we're talking about critical issues that require mind changing of minds. I would like bravery. I would like some level of respect, absolutely. But sometimes safety keeps us quiet, or safety allows other people to think they can spout harmful shit without repercussions. So I don't agree with her idea that her dinner table should be safe. I do think it should be brave. I do think you should cultivate courage. And this is where I think curiosity and leading with questions comes in. Because if I was to hear my son, and this has happened, spout things that I know are a slippery slope or parroted takes from awful sources of what manhood really is in the 21st century. I do think I need to be better at leading with a question rather than explosion and blowing up on him with, well, how can you think that your dad does this speaking for a living? That we're not going to have that shit in my house. I do think that's probably where I'd like to end up, but I think I need to start with, tell me more about what you think that means, what you just said. What does that mean? Or take that further. Where do you think you end up as a person if you carry that idea? I think we can start with questions so we don't get to the shutdown point. Because I do think the author, Catherine Jeter Morton, has a great thought that we don't want these discussions being shut down at the dinner table, because that might just double them back to their echo chamber of awfulness online, because TikTok or Instagram or the YouTubes they're watching won't shut them down, right? They won't tell them to be quiet. But I do think we need to ask questions, because in the moment of asking questions to them, we get more of their thought process. We encourage their brain to grapple with ramifications of these things they're saying or believing, but also we give them reps in. When you say something, people are not required to grant you silence or head nodding in response. People can come back at you. It is okay for people to challenge what you said, and it's best for you. You can't really hold a belief as vital to who you are if you can't argue for it or have a conversation about it. So I think that part of the article I would most likely disagree with, in terms of I want him to be able to say things at the table and we're not going to yell at him. I think you can get to unloading and challenging these harmful, toxic, sexist beliefs through embracing questions first. Don't make your own statements first. Use a ton of questions going forward. So I would encourage everybody, as part one of the pod today, reminders, it's on thecut.com by Catherine Jeezer-Morton. The article is, Can Parents Prevent Their Sons from Sliding to the Right? Go debrief it, read it, react, talk with your partner about it, talk with your kids about it, and remember what we said, encourage brave space. Lead with questions. But your son, do it to learn true accountability. He does not deserve your silence. He deserves your attention, and then he deserves you taking him down, giving him reps in. If you say something problematic or something that I disagree with, I'm going to make you stand in it and really think about its ramifications. Because I think in doing that, you'll find that this doesn't fit you anymore, that this belief system isn't really what you think it is or who you want to be. Then they can make the choice to offload it. But I don't think any of us should stand for hateful rhetoric in our house, because our house is supposed to be safe for our kids from us. The rhetoric needs to go. All right, we're back. Next article that flows, I think, from our first article discussing how do I keep my son from sliding into harmful, sexist, misogynistic ideology. In the next article, I want to say that I think is a gives us five kind of tools or five strategies to use to accomplish that, is titled Five Ways to Shore Up Boys' Social Skills. It was posted on CNN by Phyllis L. Fagel, F-A-G-E-L-L, and it was on Tuesday, January 30th of this year, 2024. In this article, you know, a quick synopsis overall, okay? It sheds light on the challenges boys face in forming meaningful connections and other practical strategies for enhancing their social skills. The author leverages her expertise as a school counselor and emphasizes the importance of addressing emotional and social development of boys to combat the loneliness that's the statistics are showing boys are encountering and the effect it's having on their overall well-being. Couple takeaways right off the top. First of all, the author talks about her son being 12 and her having to walk him through, how do I text my buddies to get them to want to do something? I don't know what to say. I don't know how. I know that they're going to text them, but what do I say? How do I activate this group to hang out? And I've been in that, not that exact scenario, but with my oldest. I ask him now, dude, how do you and your guys come to any decision? How do you guys know where you're going, what you're doing, what the plan is? Because I don't know. I've never seen these people talk. I know he goes and hangs out with friends, but I don't, like when I was growing up, David and I from Listen Up, you would hear us on the phone. You could hear us negotiating, talking about who was going where, what we were planning on doing, because the phone was in the family living room or the family basement. And that was just an inherent part. My parents could probably pick up on my ability to communicate with my boys on the phone. I don't know that. Even if they're texting each other, I don't hear it. I don't read it. So I'm worried a lot. I know Kelly and I have talked about, what is his social skills? He's not me, who likes to hear his voice all the damn time, which is probably a good thing. Remember in session one, we said, I don't need him to be me. I need him to be better versions of me. But the article gives a lot of discussion on the fact that boys currently have smaller social networks and fewer high-quality reciprocal friendship than girls their age. And boys currently are more likely to experience loneliness than girls. A lot of it, as one of the authors, that I would recommend her book, which is called Deep Secrets, Boys' Friendships and the Crisis of Connection by Niobe Way. She's a professor of developmental psychology at NYU. She has a quote in the article that says, even though we're more open to the idea that boys want friendship, which is a good thing, right? They want to be connected. They want buddies. We've created a culture that doesn't value the skills they need to have real friendships. I mean, think about it. When you think about friendship skills, we always call them soft skills. Why are they soft skills? That in and of itself lends it towards the man box, which makes soft feminine, and then boys avoid it. We get hard skills for how you make money, but soft skills are for... No, we don't have skill sets to build friendships. I mean, and why do we need these things? As Dutch researchers reported in July of 2023, they did a study, 11 to 17-year-old boys, and higher quality friendships improve the self-esteem and the well-being of 11 to 17-year-old boys. Now, this from a coach, and you guys know my history and our family's history with sports teams, is one of the tried and true reasons and rationale across the history of time that people have said you should be part of a sports team because it gives you connection. Now, I would argue just being on a sports team doesn't give you connection, and this article is a must-read for all coaches out there as well, because his proximity to another young boy on your team doesn't automatically make you friends and give you connection. So this article really dives into, hey, how do we actually help them in their proximity? If we drop them off at practice, if we drop them off at school, if we mush 10 dudes into a room, what could we actually give them to create true friendships? You know, and I think number one, it's okay to recognize, and the article talks about it, that our kids aren't all going to be the same, right? So like Kelly, how she goes about making friends are different than me, and Kane, how Kane and I go about making friendships has never been the same. And the article quotes Janice McCabe, an associate press professor of sociology at Dartmouth, and she talks about there are three types of social networks that kids might gravitate to that fits their personality. You got tight knitters, you got compartmentalizers, and you got samplers. And Professor McCabe says tight knitters have one tight group of friends, one tight knit group of friends. Everyone's connected. So say you got four friends, everyone's equally friends with everybody. Maybe this is the Friends model from the sitcom. A compartmentalizer, the second type of social network that kids might gravitate to, has two to four groups of friends. But a sampler, the third type of social networker, a sampler has as many friends as the other group, but not as direct close ties to the other group. So you might, in your house, on your team, depending on if you're a parent or a coach, you might have some tight knitters, you might have some compartmentalizers, you might have samplers. I think basketball lends itself to the tight knitter group. Let's say you got 12 dudes, that tends itself to inherently be more of a tight knit group. Football probably has to compartmentalize a little bit because of the different position groups, but we're all one related team. And maybe baseball falls in that same group because, hey, we're pitchers, we're hitters, we're catchers, you know, infielders and outfielders. Maybe compartmentalizers is more normal for those type of groups. But she argues that we got to, first of all, make sure we know and help our kids realize, hey, what type of friendship situation are you actually looking for? And I think that's powerful. And I think you can ask your kids, and the article talks about this, ask them, what are the pros and cons of having one small group, two or three groups, or one big, huge group that you kind of have acquaintances but not anybody real close? And maybe your kid will find their preference in there. You can talk to them about your experiences, and you can role model or talk about how did your group of friends that you have now in your life, how did it evolve? Okay, if I was talking about David and I's friendship, or Schwab's and I's friendship, or Nick Carpenter and I's friendship from way back versus folks that I just met in the last decade that I talked to a lot, those are different evolutions and different origin points that maybe your kid, your son, can find different strategies from and how they go. Next, the article does talk about it, and this is from, this is another one. I talked to this on one of my YouTube channels, Christopher Pepper, teacher who coordinates boys groups in San Francisco. He talks about boys really need logistical help. Like literally, like if they say, I want three friends, okay, they literally talk about like, who are you going to text them? Like, who are the people that you're going to try to reach out to today? They worry about, if I send the wrong text, are they going to be bored by what I ask? What if they don't like what I ask they want to do? So they, you know, sometimes the boys will say, what do you want to do? They don't want to offend the other person, so they don't really get into the specifics and the conversation dies. So this article talks about, hey, give two options. You want to go mini golf or bowling? You want to get online and game, or do you want to walk down to Safeway? Whatever those things may be, okay? That's one of the things that the article talks about, is that the boys themselves, sometimes in just logistical coordination, are hesitant to put forth their own opinions for fear of offending or looking foolish in front of the other kids on the end of the line, who then themselves have the same anxieties about if I say something wrong or something he doesn't want to do, he's going to be mad or stop talking to me. Now you got two people unwilling to offer anything, then they settle for nothing. So I think that's something you can logistically help your son, your players out with. Hey, send two options, see what happens. Be vulnerable, stand in it, and offer one thing you know you really want to do, one thing you know maybe he wants to do, see what happens. It does talk about a lot in the article that half of teens, ages 13 to 17, so your son or your players probably fall in this, use the internet almost constantly. And a lot of it, especially on the boys' side, they gravitate towards tech because it doesn't require much of them. But also, they can get online. They don't have to leave their house. They already know the gaming site they both like, so there's no question about whether or not this other person likes to do this thing. But then when they're in these gaming sites, they don't really develop true friendships, and oftentimes they show up as their worst selves. We've done talks on our YouTube channel for teams of men about how boys tend to lax and gravitate towards the worst versions of themselves in sites because they don't really see the harm of their language, the harm of what they suggest or say with one another to the other people on the other end of the digital spectrum. Wow. Now, listen, that's not saying that you can't have your kids on video games. Oftentimes the article talks about boys find value in their online personas. And some of those are game-saving connections. Like, at least they have a gamer party they know is going to happen on Friday, and that gets them through the week. So I'm not saying you can't let your child play video games, but I think we do need to be cognizant of what's happening in those spaces. Just spend one day this month just in the vicinity of when they're gaming. Do you like what you hear as a dad? Do you like what you hear as a mom? Do you like what you hear as a coach? And ask them to reflect on who they are when they're showing up in those spaces. One of the big points in the article talks about teaching boys to be curious. Niobe Way, again, the author talks about we don't teach interpersonal curiosity. So questions like, why are you drawn to your friends? What makes you want to hang out with that person? We ask a lot, did you do your homework? Did you get your chores done? But we don't often ask them to dive into what makes them tick. And if that's what makes them tick, why does that apply to their friendship group? Does their friendship group hold the same values, the same traits, the same belief systems that they do? Are you getting a connection point in authenticity? Are you getting a connection point in just the sport, etc.? And the last one of the last steps is how do we help boys read social cues? It's often like if a boy makes an offensive remark, goes back to our first part of the podcast. If they say something offensive at home, or they are in the vicinity, one of their siblings says something offensive, you can cue and you can model by saying, hey, can you explain why you thought that joke was funny? I thought it was offensive. And without raising your voice, you continue to keep them engaged in the conversation. You show them how to stand up to and question things in their circle that they might hear later. Boys often mask, and I've done some of these speeches myself where, I call the behind the laughter, where we use laughter we don't recognize it. We're uncomfortable with something somebody says, and we just kind of laugh hesitantly. But our friend or our teammate interprets that laughter as a co-signing to do more of the nonsense they were doing, rather than giving us tools. We need to give our kids tools, our boys tools and phrases to challenge those harmful phrases or words or actions that their teammates are taking. Like the article says, Christopher Pepper says, boys are more likely to connect through sarcasm and joking, and oftentimes they misinterpret each other's sarcasm and joking. If help them understand that friends stop smiling or silent, they may have crossed the line. We're not arguing, and the author makes this clear, we're not arguing to make boys and girls friendships look the same. Okay, but we do need boys to onboard some of these skills to combat the loneliness that's affecting an entire generation right now. Episode 215, there you have it. We hope if you're a parent out there, if you're a coach out there of young men, we hope you found some value in the two articles. Like I mentioned before, we will put them up with the links when we talk about what our episode today is about, so we can give the authors credit and all the people, great folks they quoted in there. As always, you can see this episode up on our SoundCloud, on our Instagram, on all the Apple Podcast app that you have. And we look forward to seeing you next time across the street.